The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, and here we go again. It is Tuesday, the 5th of November. Let's see here. Election Day. All right, well, not much election noise. George Filer is here this first hour to make some noise in his inimitable fashion. George, of course, the editor, creator, and founder of Filer's Files, the beautifully produced, internationally circulated UFO ET What's Happening kind of weekly newsletter. And we're going to talk about issue number, I think it's number 44 tonight. Are you there, George? Welcome back.
I'm here.
Well, you sound like you're right here. You sound great.
Running the elections.
Who won?
Well, at least in New Jersey, it appears that Governor Christie maintained his position as governor, at least. In our town, he won like 4-1 over the Senator Bono.
Well, he wants to run for president. You watch his hat will be in the ring soon. Is he continuing to lose weight?
Yes, as I understand he is.
Yeah.
He's a smart fella and says his mind and probably would be a good president, although I don't know him personally.
No. George, you got it wrong. You would be a good president. No professional politicians, please.
Well, that's true.
Remember how he leaped under the covers with Obama after Sandy? And then they had a falling out later on. I can't track it all. It's a rather morbid soap opera. But he once...
Well, he was trying to get money for the state after it was hit pretty hard by the...
That's right. Money is still sitting around, though. It hadn't even all been applied to. There's still people who haven't been able to go back home.
Oh, sure.
Amazing. I guess they're all staying at your place.
No, but we're filled up.
Uh-huh. Okay. Issue number 44, Filer's Files. If you look at the top of headlines at rents.com, you'll see the current, most current, three editions. 42, 43, and 44. And if I remember right, 45 comes out tomorrow. George always tricks me.
Right.
One day too quick.
I'd like to talk about it a little bit.
Number 45?
Yeah, even though you don't see it. Something rather extraordinary happened to me, and I wanted to mention it.
Oh, yeah? Are you all right?
Sure.
Okay.
Basically, what happened, a friend of mine, George Walkine, let me know that a dear friend of his had an alleged UFO relic.
Relic?
Sure, we, a relic from a crashed UFO.
All right, a piece of the action, okay.
Dating back to 1947-48 period.
Uh-huh.
In New Mexico, but not the Roswell.
Okay.
And I'm like probably what your listeners would say, oh, no, that can't possibly be true. But in any case, somebody says they've got a piece. I have a friend who I trust, and he claims that his friend has a piece. He says this piece is about the size of your hand, and it's very significant.
Talk a little louder, George, if you would, please.
This piece of or relic of a UFO is very significant because, according to him, it leaves a message with the person who picks it up and holds it in his hand.
Like a telepathic kind of a message.
Right. And he said the message to him was kind of like, you know, almost like, welcome to Earth, you know, we love you, kind of that kind of a message.
Wait a minute, welcome to Earth? If they're not from Earth, why would they say welcome to Earth?
Well, I'm just...
Okay, anyway, all right. Is this generic greeting the same thing that each person who purportedly handles this relic gets? Do they receive the same message?
I went down to the University of Delaware, and it's located right next to the university.
Mm-hmm.
And when I picked it up, I didn't feel much.
Oh, you handled it.
Right.
Now, did I hear you say that two people you know had pieces of something strange, or just one? Did I?
Just one, but several people have handled it.
Okay. And you got several, to handle it. All right, nice.
Several people, when they handle it, it's about the size of your hand, and it'll be in my, you know, picture in my files tomorrow.
We'll put it up tomorrow, as soon as I get it.
It looks like... well, kind of like, it looks almost like mirror light, but it was tested at the university, and they said it was very strange in that it appeared to be made in space. It was a
zero-G?
Zero weightless environment
that mm-hmm.
they can tell by, you know, under microscope.
By the molecular structure, if it was created in a zero-G environment, it would exhibit certain characteristics.
Right.
Okay.
Very much like molybdenum.
Molybdenum? Molybdenum?
Yeah, molybdenum.
Molybdenum. Right. Okay, got it. So this is, was it molybdenum?
No, it had all the characteristics of it, but it was like too light for that particular metal.
Huh.
And when you hold it in your hand, it looks like it would be real heavy, but it feels like a pencil. And many people who have held it have gotten messages, which ties into a recent book put out by a friend of mine, Kathleen Barden, and Denise Stoner, claiming that the craft is... operated mainly biologically. And in some way, this metal, or maybe it's computers in it or whatever, but it has a message that it gives people. Some people can pick it up and some can't. I didn't pick it up at first, but later on I got a message about the Ten Commandments. That was kind of the key that for us to go into space, we should follow the Ten Commandments.
Well, how about just following the Golden Rule? That'd be enough.
Right, basically.
Now, I have a question, please. You went down there, and this is a friend of yours who has this item, right?
Yeah.
Well, has he kept...
Basically a friend of a friend, but now he's a friend of mine.
All right. Has he kept this a secret for a long time? So he's just rolling this thing out, so to speak. Right. Otherwise, it may have disappeared long ago.
Right.
So it got to the point of being tested and evaluated by the university. That's very Very interesting. And you'll have a full report on this tomorrow in Filer's Files number 45.
Right. But it was very significant to me, and I thought I should mention it.
Well, it's very significant. I mean, that is.
I don't know if it's true or not, but I was very impressed by the person who showed it to me and by just feeling it myself. Let's put it this way. It's nothing like I've ever seen before in my life.
Wow. Well, that's saying a lot. I'll look forward to seeing this tomorrow. You sound good, but we need more volume, so if you can keep right up on the phone, we'll be doing
okay.
Better. There we go. Now, this item, it looked like a mirror, kind of like highly polished?
It's hard to explain, but...
Could you see yourself in it?
You know, much of size, roughly the size, if you think of holding something in your hand,
mm-hmm.
it would be about that size.
Like a piece of toast or something?
3 inches by 1 inch. But
okay.
It's very shiny, and it has the ribbing in it. Like it was broke off.
You have some good photos of it?
Yes.
All right. Hold on, George, just a minute. This is all very intriguing. And it goes without saying that some of you may recall stories, allegedly, transferred from visitors to human folks that... or at least the humans were surmising that the craft in some cases were actually grown around the pilot. Not that they were necessarily attached to the pilot's physical form, but mentally, intellectually, the craft was designed to biologically interface with his mind. And these pilots were chosen at a young age to be bonded and fused with a craft that would be made sort of biologically to fit them. You've heard that before, George. Did I state that properly?
Yeah, essentially, as the pilot, you don't turn...
knobs.
A knob or handle or
you know,
the throttle or anything. You just tell it what you want. You say in your mind that, you know, we want to go Mach 10, we want to turn left or whatever. And
all right. Very good. Stand by. Hold on, George.
Whatever you want.
That's
part of you.
Okay, let's pursue this in just a minute, please. We're running a little bit late, and we'll come back right in a minute or two with George Filer. We'll tell you how to get a free edition of Filer's Files. In fact, you can get edition number 45, so hang on, and we will do that and more in a minute. Okay, so look for edition number 45 tomorrow, and if you would like that sent to your electronic mailbox, all you have to do is write to George tonight or tomorrow and ask. And the address to write to George Filer is Major, M-A-J-O-R, Major, Star, and he is, MajorStar@Verizon.net. MajorStar@Verizon.net. Did I get that right? Okay, so just write and ask for issue number 45, and you get to see the piece of whatever it is. So now, being an Air Force veteran and having been in this field for a long time, heard many stories, seen photographs, it's unusual to have somebody step forth after having apparently hidden something like this away for a long time. Where did he explain that he got it, if he did explain that?
The person who actually has it in his possession, has a very good position and a very beautiful house overlooking a stream next to the University of Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
He does not want his name and so on used, but he received it from his good friend who was a doctor of languages at the University of Delaware, who was an expert in languages of all types, including alien languages, and had, you know, visited with Jesse Marshall and taken the writing that Jesse Marshall had from
right.
the 47.
So he studied the glyphs and the markings and...
Put out books about it and everything. Well, when he passed on, he left it to this particular individual that I happened
to now know.
Asked to meet with. And I was shown the object. And frankly, I was, you know, very skeptical. And I think everybody has a right to be. But at the same time, there's evidence that I held in my hand was very different than anything else I've ever seen in my life. So I think it's something special.
Well, the test results that you already mentioned would suggest that it is obviously special and has the characteristics, if you joined us late, of having been manufactured or assembled or created in a zero-G environment. It's
right.
Very interesting.
It's significant in itself. You know.
And it's similar to molybdenum, but not necessarily right. Molybdenum. That's very interesting. Was it shiny enough to see your reflection in, or just, what was the color of it, George?
Well, it was, the actual color was like you'd see a very shiny piece of metal, almost chrome-like.
Really?
Like, almost like right next to chrome-like.
Mm-hmm.
And
stainless steel.
Right. And we were on the back porch of this person's house, and then they have the beautiful reddish leaves from the trees that they're changing color this time of year, and it reflects those leaves. The colors of those.
Oh, movies. Got it. Good. That's a very good description.
So it's kind of, very exciting at the time and very believable. And you might say it has a good past, which would tend to make it real as well.
What is can you, without giving anything away, The provenance of it, again, goes back to 47-48. Is there any more of a history of it that you can share with us that you know?
Well, it has something to do with, heard of Arcturus books. This fellow wrote some books and tied into Arcturus books, and they apparently the object was bought through them or because of their help or something. And I'm interested in it, in going further and studying it in more detail and getting metallurgists and so on.
Was it, did they try to do the traditional Hollywood stuff, like cut a tiny piece of it off or otherwise?
I don't know all the details that have been done, but... Quite a bit of extensive work has apparently been done, and I don't even know if the University of Delaware would admit that kind of thing. But
they might not. This is very interesting. Now, was it malleable? Could you bend it, flex it?
No.
It was okay.
A solid piece, but I thought it was exciting, and I thought that your listeners might like to hear about it.
Oh, thank you for sharing, by all means. And I hope you listening will get George's Filer's Files number 45 coming out tomorrow. Just remember to write to him at MajorStar@Verizon.net, and ask for a copy, and he'll be happy to mail it to you. What's our subscription?
I feel that there's a lot of important people. Whose names we would recognize, who are becoming more interested in the subject, that it's starting to open up, and that exciting information is coming forward. And we have a guest tonight that is trying to put some of this exciting information together.
James, I didn't know we had a guest. Good. Well, we'll bring the guest on in just a couple of minutes. Have to take
He's
a break.
Done,
who is the guest?
Jamie Carman, and he has a new movie out with already won 5 outstanding movie awards, but it's obviously about UFOs. And he has a website called the Hidden Hand, the movie.com. But that movie, you can show it, you might say, to the public or anyone, and it's very convincing.
Okay, let's do this just real quick before we take our break. His name is Jamie, J-A-M-I-E, and last name?
C-A-R-M-E-N.
Jamie Carman, all right. And the name of the film is Hidden Hand.
Right, well, this is his website, the Hidden Hand, themovie.com. The movie, name Hidden Hand.
Got it, okay. I'll put that up right now in guests so people can look at that. And I will go to the website while we take a break here as well. Very good. We need quality films in this field. There have been so many put out that...
And he's had his own UFO sighting, which I thought, got him interested in the field. And what's happening is that thousands of people each month are seeing these UFOs and reporting them. And, you know, nothing like seeing one makes you a believer, so to speak.
Indeed. Well said. All right, stand by, George. We'll come right back and welcome Jamie Carman to the program. We'll talk about his film as well. So during the break, maybe you want to go to HiddenHandTheMovie.com and take a look around. Okay, back in just a couple. Okay, and we're back and talking to George Filer as we do on the first Tuesday of each month. George's edition number 45 will be out tomorrow, again with the pictures and story of that piece of unidentifiable. It doesn't fit any known paradigm of metal so far, at least according to the university that did the testing on it. We'll be finding out a lot more about that, I'm sure, in the future, especially tomorrow. So if you want a free edition of that number 45, just write to George at majorstar@verizon.net. Okay, George, introduce your special guest here.
Well, our special guest is Jamie Carman, and he's produced a number of movies. Actually, I'm in one of them, but not in this particular one, Hidden Hand.
Mm-hmm.
And this film has won 5 outstanding movie awards. He can, you know, detail those, but he's had his own sightings, and he's interviewed some of the top people in the industry, and it's very convincing, his movie about UFOs, and it's one of those movies that you can show your friends, and at least I feel, convince them that there's something very important going on in our skies, and that it should be researched in great detail.
In our own galaxy, the Milky Way, I've got 2 stories today running in headlines. There are billions of planets that are so Earth-like, they're projecting that they could all, each and every one of them, harbor life very much like we have. So right. It's all interesting.
If you're a religious person, is it make sense for God to produce only one Earth? Seems very logical for him to produce multiple Earths with multiple civilizations.
No, you won't get any arguments for me. All right, The Hidden Hand is the name of the film, and you can watch the trailer online. Just go to HiddenHandTheMovie.com. Jamie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. My name is James. Only my mother calls me Jamie. So George took special liberties.
Well, I don't want to step on your mother's privileges, so forgive me. All right.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
All right. When did you first get involved in this? George mentioned you had a sighting or an experience of some kind. Was this something that happened to you as a youngster or later on?
Well, no, this happened later on. I just recently had two sightings. One was, do you know Antonio Urosi?
No.
He's from Italy. He's I think he's the most famous videographer of UFOs. If you go to his website, there's just, you know, he's been filming UFOs almost on a weekly basis.
Oh, and I know who you mean.
And the thing is wherever he travels in the world, he films them. It's like, you know, it doesn't matter where he is, he can film them. And he was visiting me. He was staying with me a couple of days, and he said, okay, we got up and we were leaving. He said, okay, today at 4:30. And then I just didn't think about it. And then we ate lunch and we did whatever we had to do. And then we were walking down the street at 4:30, and he just pulls his camera out and he starts shooting in the sky. And I really couldn't see what he was shooting at. And then he pointed, and then I could see like these two dots up in the sky. But then when you see how he has a camera that goes 70 times the magnification, and you can actually see these objects, these UFOs. And it was amazing because, you know, that happened twice. And there's another person, he's a friend of mine, he's also in the film, his name is Mark Brinkerhoff. We were celebrating my birthday in a garden here in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, and he had seen some UFOs when he was leaving his house, and he's a contactee, he's had contact all of his life since the late 50s. And he's also been someone who's taken photos or video or Super 8 film of UFOs all of his life. And so, you know, we were cooking and having a barbecue, and he was just pointing up there and taking pictures. And then soon a whole crowd of people gathered around him, and we were just staring at these three orbs up in the sky. And then they would move, and then they would just hang up in the sky for a long time.
What color were they?
I would say they were metallic, because it was just, it seemed like the sun was reflecting off of them.
Okay. All right, the Hidden Hand, the movie, I've looked at the trailer. It seems to be centered, to a degree, around abductees, hybrids. David Jacobs made a couple comments. There are a number of people making comments about this. What's the thrust of the film, and why did you make it?
Well, I do spend a lot of time with abductees, but I think for me the reason I made it was I wanted to make a film that kind of led you through the phenomena and that relates to ET. And so first off saying that it's real, and then progressively going through different sides or aspects of the phenomenon. And you know, I didn't do that necessarily saying that this is the truth, but I was saying this is what is being presented by all these people. And
sure.
I let the viewers decide what they, you know, what intrigues them. But so I would say it's a primer on the subject, and a pretty good one, a pretty deep one. Then if people see that and they like it or they're intrigued, then they can study more.
Okay, very good. You have Bob Dean is in there. Bob, looking good. And glad to see him still at it. David Jacobs, still doing what he does so well. Let's see if
right.
I can get this to play for our listeners here. They can hear the trailer here. It's a couple minutes long, I guess. How long is the film altogether?
It's 80 minutes.
Okay. Here we go. Here's the trailer.
I don't talk about UFOs. We've known for years what they are. It is the most complex, most extraordinary thing that has ever happened to mankind.
The government's important because they have the radar systems. They're in a position to collect the data.
This is a lie that has gone now for so long. How do you undo such a long-standing series of deceptions?
These people are telling stories that are so abnormal they could never make them up. I remember them putting a needle through my optic nerve.
There was a point like 10 years ago where I got to see what I call my daughter, which was an extraction of me mingled with their genetics.
I think that they may have been using me to produce hybrid offspring from the time of my first menses on throughout young adulthood.
We put animals in cages. We take chimpanzees and do medical experiments on them. But it's no longer just if somebody else uses it on us.
What is the effect on a person's life who's had abduction experiences all of their lives? It's a club that nobody wants to belong to.
Very interesting. It is a club that nobody wants to belong to. Fortunately, they are able to get in groups and get group support. It has obviously caused a lot of people, whatever it is, a great deal of grief in their lifetimes. Many don't ever talk about it. Any idea on that, James? How many people are involved in this whole abduction phenomenon? We used to try and speculate on that. David was on the program years and years ago, and he thinks it's quite a large number.
Well, he thinks it's in the, 2 or 3 million just for this country. So that would, that would be definitely at least 100 million for the world. I don't know if it's that high.
That'd be a lot of crews working here on this planet, abducting humans and probing them and releasing them.
Right, but I think if Joe Montaldo?
Uh-huh.
Joe Montanol, he's got a database of well over 10,000. And so I think that's kind of, if he has a database of over 10,000, I think we're definitely looking in this country maybe of 100,000 or the hundreds of thousands maybe.
Could be. But again, that would require a lot of folks from somewhere else with a lot of equipment to come here on a lot of missions to take care of a lot of people, unless they.
Well, I mean, that's if it's sometimes it's being done like that, but it seems like there's other facets of it where sometimes people, they're not necessarily taken into a UFO. They're kind of taken into another dimension, or a hole opens up in their wall, and then they're sucked into a space, and they don't know if it's in a UFO. Or if it's underground base. So, I mean, there's a lot of sides to that. I think unless you study it more in a scientific way, it's hard really to say one way or the other.
And it's hard to study something like this scientifically when it is so anecdotal. Although there are scars, there are marks, there certainly are hypnotic regression memories that are quite extraordinary. There are other physical evidences as well, so it's a very, very, very Byzantine and murky field, the whole thing. And then we can go to the top of the whole ladder and talk about the alleged agreements with one or more groups that come here and want to be able to do whatever it is they're doing to humans, research, experimentation, hybrids, whatever, and they make a deal with the power structure, and they trade off technology, which the military would love, and it's all interesting. George, anything to add here?
Well, I have spent quite a bit of time with David Jacobs, and I don't know exactly, but probably met 100 people who claim to be abductees, and they're very believable, and I'm sure. And I've been there with several psychiatrists, and they had interviewed the, abductees with open minds. Well, John Mack was one of them. In any case, felt that they had gone through a very severe situation, something like a rape, something happened very significant in their life.
Severe PTSD in many cases.
Right. And although it sounds funny, but I've run into quite a few abductees who really liked the fact that they were being abducted and they felt important and In other words, there is a positive side.
Well, that makes sense. There is a diversity amongst us in how we react to severe trauma, and maybe they were picked up by a different bunch that were, you know, having a good hair day, and they treated them well. I don't know.
Well, they felt they were treated with respect, at least.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And they were, well, taken aboard the craft and out into space and shown Earth from distance.
Yeah, it would be something that I think...
Exciting.
Yeah, you deserve to go on a trip like that, George. You've earned your trip.
Right.
James Carman, filmmaker, producer, director. This is an 88 minutes?
It's 80 minutes.
80 minutes, okay. The issue of abductees and what happens to them and what they have been through is something that has sort of faded out of the front ranks of the UFO ET nomenclature and what's going on in the alternative media. It was 15 years ago, I did so many programs with people who were relating their experiences and talking about it, and then it seems that interest kind of faded, or was made to fade. And maybe this film will be in the right time to bring that issue back, because it certainly deserves front and center study.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there's still people having experiences. There's still something going on. It's not like something that just stopped happening. So, and, you know, I think there are a lot of people, they like to concentrate on the positive or the wonderful, and I do too, but I think, you know, you kind of have to concentrate on or look at everything that's going on and see, you know, otherwise you have a kind of Pollyanna view of the universe.
Pollyanna. Haven't seen Polly for a long time. She's around. David Jacobs' book, The Threat, when you read that book, I assume you did read it, James, what was your feedback to yourself about that book? What did you think of it? That's Professor Jacobs wrote about the whole idea of abduction, what his research, and he has worked with countless.
Well, initially I found it very alarming, very concerning, and then I found something interesting. It's like the more I met other hypnotherapists, I talked to, you know, Bud Hopkins, and, you know, I've talked to quite a few other ones, Dolores Cannon too. And it's interesting, if you talk to someone like Dolores Cannon, she says it's all positive interaction, and the people who think it's negative, they just don't understand it. And, you know, that could be, or could not be, but it seemed in some way that the people who were hypnotizing were in a way drawing certain kinds of people to them. That's what I was thinking, and because it seemed like there was, that each one had a trademark of a sort, and so then I just said, well, maybe David Jacobs is experiencing a part of what's going on, but not the whole thing.
Well, what David's book came to, by way of a conclusion, this book was published in 1997, was that David didn't set out to end up where he ended up with the book. He did feel that whatever's been going on here has been going on for a long time and was nearing some kind of a conclusionary stage. Did he talk to you about that while he was involved with the making of your film?
Yes.
Tell us more, please.
Well, I mean, he thought that basically the whole hybridization process is to bring, if not all, some of the hybrids here and intermingle with us, and we wouldn't be able to tell if they're human or not, but except for the fact that they would have the powers to control us. And
What kind of powers were you talking about?
They would just like telepathically be able to lock in like the Greys do and you know, read your mind and also influence you and maybe give you screen memories. So, yeah, it's a very...
Well, that would be no contest.
Paranoid vision. Yeah, it would be no contest. But I have heard, not only from him, but from a few other peoples of these kind of scenarios, but it's... They're very few in the literature, as far as I can tell. And I've met a couple people, But that, you know, they seem to be more like the paranoid fringe of ufology, and that doesn't mean it's not real. If it was happening, you would be paranoid or you'd be freaked out, I can imagine. But
yeah,
I don't see it as much. So I just noticed that it was there, but I didn't say, okay, that's the way it is.
One of the best of all the abductees I've ever had on the program over the years was Jim Sparks, and I noticed he is in the film too. Very impressive man, very articulate, was lucid during his experiences, most of them, and really told an amazing story.
Yeah, no, he's a great guy, and I'm glad I got to interview him for my film. And he's the kind of person, he says, like, for him, that first 6 years was total trauma. It was just like a nightmare. And then he said after that, he kind of understood them better.
Uh-huh.
And he knew what they wanted or expected from him. And yeah, then the relationship got better. And it was, and then he would stop describing himself as an abductee and more as an experiencer.
Exactly.
Although it's not like, okay, he could decide, okay, I'm going to go or not go tonight. It was like, if they want him, they take him. So mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. sense, you know, he didn't have any say of when he was there or when he wasn't.
Yeah, and there's nowhere to run. You can't get away from it. If you're tabbed, you're tabbed. I mean, wherever you are,
yeah,
they'll just zoom over and pick you up. Go ahead, George.
David Jacobs actually, when I was at his meetings, but some of the people would explain that, you know, they were very upset about being abducted, and they were university students, but they had resources. In any case, they would get on they would go down to the airport, walk around the airport, and the first place they could get a flight to, they would get on a plane. They didn't know when they left where they were going. Landed in Switzerland, you know, went into a hotel. No one in the world knew that they were there,
right,
and they would be picked up that night.
Yeah.
And
I've heard that too.
In any case, there is this feeling that, you know, it is scary and so on at first, but apparently, they have their reasons for doing it. Part of the reasons that I keep on being told are that they're trying to get us to take care of our environment, that we are in a very, very dangerous situation with Fukushima and the radiation from the
They're going West. To have to intercede, George, or we're not going to make it. I do believe we've passed the point of no return.
Well, you may be right, but that's what their warning is about, that we've got to take care of our Earth.
Well, you and I could warn just as effectively. I think we need to be given an ultimatum like the day the Earth stood still. Either knock it off, clean it up, or you're toast. I don't think humans at this point in time are going to listen to much less than that. Then there's the other potential, James Carman, of multiple races coming here, cutting multiple deals with various power brokers on the planet, and you got overlapping and confusion and rivalries and who knows? It can be quite a very complicated situation.
Right. I mean, I don't know if you know Lynn Buchanan. He's in my film.
Yeah, I saw
film,
that.
But
yeah,
but he said that he personally had contact with three different types of ETs.
Right.
And he worked as an empath to like translate, you know, between the government and the ETs. And he said that there is very much a technology exchange program going on right now. And
well, Lynn has come forward with a lot more data than lately. I used to talk almost exclusively about remote viewing, which he's very good. And this part of it, I should call him and get him back on the program. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think he'd like to talk. There's still certain things he won't talk about. But
oh, sure.
But he will talk about, I mean, I think that's already pretty amazing, isn't it, to talk? And he's also someone who's been abducted.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that part of it.
Yeah. So, and George also, too, you know, I don't know if he went inside a spacecraft when he was a child.
Which?
I don't know if you know that.
George Filer?
Yeah.
You mean the George Filer, the sitting on the other microphone, on the other telephone? Our George Filer?
That's right.
Yeah.
George, you've been holding out on me. I didn't know. All right.
Sometimes when we got lots of time, I'll tell you about it.
All right. Well, maybe how about next month? Christmas. It'd be a Christmas present for all of us. That'd be fun. James Carmen, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you for being here tonight. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Pleasure to talk to you.
Love to see the film. How do we get it?
Well, I can send you a copy if you'd like. But
oh, if you can.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you can send a review copy, I'd very much like that, yeah. George.
Yeah, just tell me where to send it. Otherwise, you can download it from the website, hiddenhandthemovie.com. There's many links, iTunes, Google Play, Amazon Instant, Hulu, Vudu.
Yeah, I'll send my address to George. I think he's already got it, but anyway, I'll send it to George. Thank you for that offer. I appreciate that. And thanks for being here, and best of luck on the film.
Thank you so much.
Okay, James.
Bye-bye.
George, are you there, George?
Yes, I'm here.
Now, George, next month, you know what I want to talk about? Okay, you got it.
Right.
And let's remind people they can get issue number 45 tomorrow. Just write to George at Major Star, M-A-J-O-R, Major Star at Verizon.net. Thank you, my friend. Anything else you want to say?
I'm just saying they could also go to my website at NationalUFOCenter.com and see a lot of the same information.
All right, very good. Well, let's get him to sign up. What's your subscriber base now? What do we get it up to, 12?
The subscriber base is about 21,000, and I'm sending out about 13,000 emails a week.
13 a week, good. 13,000 a week. Congratulations. Okay, George, talk to you next month or maybe sooner, all right?
Okay.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Okay. I'm the nicest guys around. George Filer. All right, we'll be right back with hour number two, so hang on.